This is Focus with Emma Griffiths on ABC Radio Brisbane.
If you don't take this seriously, 233,000 people might knock on your door to convince you otherwise. That's the number of people who had a confirmed case of the flu last year in Australia. 233,000. It was a bad year for it, one of the worst in recent times. 745 people died from it last year. So they may not actually knock on your door, but maybe this will change your mind about the flu. Do you have questions about the flu? Vaccination? Treatment? How it's spread? How does it get so bad that you can die from it? Your questions today on Focus to respiratory scientist Mark Russell Pavia. Also, your stories about the worst flu you've ever had. What did it feel like? What happened? Did you have to go to hospital? The number is 1300 222 612 to text 0467 922 612. Email the Focus team, focusbrisbane@abc.net.au. This is your hour to talk, to ask questions, to tell stories when we focus on you.
Emma Griffiths, Focus on ABC Radio Brisbane.
Mark Russell Pavia is a respiratory scientist and is here to share his knowledge about the flu with you. Also, asthma. That's another biggie. And he can answer your questions. The number to call, 1300 222 612. You've got about 40 minutes with Mark today on Focus, so don't delay. The calls are coming in already. Mark, first of all, what does a respiratory scientist do?
We conduct a range of tests. So we work with the GPs, we work with specialists that may be wanting to measure how well someone's respiratory system's working. They might be looking for diagnosis, they might be looking at monitoring a chronic disease, but also we conduct a range of other tests. So they might be specialty tests, assessing how medically fit someone is to fly as well. So,
and do you see patients?
Yes, yes, absolutely. We see patients from the wider community that are referred from their local GP, but we also see patients who are admitted to the respiratory unit. We see patients that might be undergoing cancer treatment as well. So there's a huge variety of people that we see and deal with.
Okay. And lots of questions, I'm sure, that you have to answer in your day-to-day work.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So we're adding to those list of questions today. Dawn is in Redcliffe. Dawn, what's your question for Mark about the flu?
I just wanted to know, because I'm allergic to eggs, is it right that the flu vaccine has something to do with eggs?
Yeah, that is true. So the way that they make the flu vaccine is to use the host in the egg. So you may be one of those people who needs an alternative. There are other alternatives that you can discuss in terms of vaccination with your GP. There's not just one vaccine that's suitable for everyone. So some people are allergic and are allergic to eggs. So there may be something that your GP can advise you and an alternative that you can still stay protected during this season.
Oh, thank you.
So, Dawn, have you had it before? Have you had any sort of flu shot before?
No, I haven't.
Might be worth investigating if there is something with your GP. We're only 5 minutes into Focus. Already got calls coming in for you, Mark. Bob in Annalee. Bob, you've got a specific question about whether you can have the vaccine too. What's happening?
Well, I had Guillain-Barre And when the swine flu came out, I was told that I couldn't have the flu injection. And now swine flu is included in all the flu injections. And I'm wanting to know how this stands with the new combination that they're providing.
Okay, well, the new quadrivalent vaccine, that's for the southern hemisphere that has been approved, has H1N1, H3N2. These are the different strains that are involved in it. And you are correct in saying that it does have the Brisbane-like virus from 2008 involved in it. So this strain, whilst there are changes every year to the vaccine, given your other complications that you have, definitely a question that you need to be speaking to the GP about, just to make sure that there's going to be no complications after your disease.
My big worry is that they told me that if I ever had the swine flu injection, I would get Guillain-Barre again. And so that's what I was worried about.
Okay, well, look, definitely
I'll
you need
to the GP.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. He's going to know your full medical history and can obviously comment on that.
What is Guillain-Barre?
It's a condition where the white cells of your body attacks the sheath of the nerves, of your nerves. And it's very debilitating, but it's not, you don't die from it, but you become very debilitated.
It sounds terrible, Bob.
It was awful.
Dear,
I was in hospital for 4 weeks and 5 days.
Oh, well, don't want that again then, do you? Yes. Oh, my goodness. We've got more questions coming in. I wanted to ask you as well, Mark, about there's a new formulation for older people at the moment. We've seen a high-dose one and then an add-on, flu add or something it's called, to even boost that. What's different about it?
Okay, so we know that the patients with 65 years and older have a lower immune response. So they're more susceptible to the flu virus. They're also, their immune response to the vaccine is reduced because of that lower immune response. So what we've done is created the Fluzone high dose Fluad, and it contains more antigen. So what it's trying to really do is trying to kickstart that immune defense response for those patients who are more likely to get it.
Why can't we all have that?
Well, look, at 65 years of age, there is that lower immune response. Some of us have healthy immune systems, not really needed. We're not in the high risk category, so it's designed.
It wouldn't make any difference, really.
It's mainly aimed at that really high risk category because we know that about 80 to 90% of the deaths that occur are of that 65 years and older. There are obviously the young children as well, but also higher rate of hospitalisation in that category as well.
Okay, and on that we have a question as well from Fiona in Oxley. You want to ask about children, Fiona?
I'm just wondering, should kids also be vaccinated if they're otherwise fairly healthy?
Otherwise fairly healthy, it's recommended from 6 years, 6 months onwards that they do receive the flu vaccine if they're healthy. Kids are like 65 years plus, their immune system hasn't fully developed. They are more likely to contract the virus. Also, the fact that you're probably finding that the mode of transmission is a lot higher. In other words, not washing hands, coughing, sneezing, things like that, it's much easier to transmit the virus. So in an otherwise healthy, they do say yes, 6 months plus.
Okay.
What are your plans with that, Fiona?
To be honest, I get it through work. My husband does too, and I haven't really thought about the kids before. But yeah, I think I will.
It is free this year for children aged between 6 months and 4 years. That's in Queensland and most other states. It seems a big change from when it was temporarily suspended in 2010, because there were children getting a flu shot that was available then and having bad reactions to it. I've had a colleague this morning already express some concern about that. Mark, what would you say about that? Is there any reason for concern around that now?
Okay, look, everyone will find that they've got a friend who was, will say you've got a friend that was sick from having the vaccine. Generally, if someone has an allergic reaction to the vaccine, it's hives or rash or something along those lines. You don't get the flu from having the flu vaccine. They're not injecting the live virus into the system. There is a flu vaccine that does have the live virus, but the ones, the quadrivalents that you're getting from your GP, no, it's actually a fragment of the influenza virus or a killed virus. So you're not going to, you might have a sore arm. If people do get sick, it's coincidence. They might get a cold or they might go on to develop the flu, but it's not caused from the vaccine, no.
But that brand of vaccine that was given to children in 2010 that caused a sort of spike in the number of severe reactions, some children were hospitalised with convulsions, a very small number, but very still small, it was larger than normal. Could that happen again?
Look, I suppose there is potential. It may have something to do with the manufacturing process that that the companies go through to actually make that vaccine. But there's a lot of research, a hell of a lot of research every year. It's constantly moving. It's constantly mutating. The companies spend a lot of money on researching these things. So the likelihood is a lot less, I would say.
Mm. And certainly this, the ban, the suspension has been lifted for some time as well.
And a very small, yeah, very small population as well.
Mm. What difference is it going to make getting the flu vaccination of your chance of getting the flu?
Look, it's not perfect. There's no doubt about that. So just because you have the flu vaccine doesn't mean that you are completely immune. Other viral infections, measles, things like that, you normally have 90% coverage. You'll find that you'll have a coverage in order of around about the 40 to 50% from the flu vaccine. So there is, you can still get the flu. But what we do know is that if you are vaccinated, the severity is reduced. Also, the time frame is reduced. And that was one of the problems we think with last year's flu is that the vaccine didn't match up accordingly with the strains that were going around because the virus can mutate, it can change very quickly.
It's pretty clever, isn't it, that flu virus?
It's extremely clever. It's extremely clever for something that is so small. Can you call it a living organism? I mean, it doesn't create enzymes for life, but it's basically just a little bit of DNA. And for such a small organism, it really can cause a lot of issues.
I've spoken about the dangers for particularly older people around getting the flu. How dangerous is the flu itself for children?
So the flu itself, for children specifically, they will have the same sort of symptoms that you or I might get. We have the muscle aches and pains, the respiratory distress, so the cough as well. But in kids, it can cause vomiting and diarrhea, the nausea, and that dehydration is putting them at a much higher risk. We traditionally, in the low-risk categories, don't have those extra symptoms. But the flu itself, yes, can cause that in kids, so it can be a little bit more dangerous for those groups.
Tony's in Stafford. Tony, your grandson had flu last year.
Yes, he had influenza A, and he is a little boy also who has Tourette's and ADHD, and so his tics, both vocal and physical, were like just exacerbated.
Mm, dear.
And he was really, really distressed. So I'm wondering, and he has medication for his Tourette's and ADHD, and I'm just wondering, should he be vaccinated? Like, should, so he's my daughter's son, and so should she have him vaccinated this year? I'm, like, thinking, well, yes, we should have it done.
Definitely. Very interesting. So we know that if he's, I mean, in that young category, he's at a much higher risk. With regards to the ADHD and the Tourette's itself, I suppose you really need to ask the question, when he had the flu, we all need to vocalise how we're feeling. And it may have exacerbated some of his underlying conditions with the Tourette's. Whether it was the flu that actually caused that is something that you can't really I can't really comment on. But if he's otherwise healthy and doesn't have a reaction to it, I would say definitely get him vaccinated, because we all need to have this vaccine so that we create a mass immunity, so to speak, called herd immunity. So even the ones of us who are not in that high-risk category do need to get the vaccine, because it's going to protect people who aren't so fortunate and might be able to fall ill because of it.
And as Tony's saying there, her grandson is on medication for the existing conditions. Is there any chance the flu vaccination could interfere with them?
Could have an interference. Look, there are always drug interactions with different things. I'm not aware of any between the flu virus and those particular medications, but not my area of specialty. If there's any issue, again, your primary care physician is the one to speak to regarding that, for sure.
That's Tony, your daughter would probably have to take him to the GP anyway. Just to
make sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very good question, though, isn't it? It's just something that if you're dealing with stuff already, the last thing, everyone's dealing with stuff, aren't
Absolutely.
They, Mark? You just don't want the flu. So we've got Sean. Sean, sounds like you're dealing with other stuff as well.
Yeah, well, I'm lucky enough. I'm lucky that I'm going to get a free vaccine given to me this afternoon. I've got type 1 diabetes. And my wife's coming up to get hers, and she's going to get a 4-strain vaccine, and I'm going to get a 3-strain vaccine. But I think you've already answered my question. Is a 3-strain vaccine better for me?
The 3-strain, or the trivalent, you'll find it has protection for two different influenzas, the two different influenza strains and an influenza B as well. It should be noted that the quadrivalent one does have the addition of the Brisbane-like flu. So you'll find that most of the vaccines that are being administered are the quadrivalent one. It gives a better range of protection against more viruses. But look, hey, the trivalent is definitely a better coverage than nothing at all, because being diabetic, you're obviously in that category where the secondary complications can cause issues.
Yeah, well, maybe I'm better paying $15 and getting the 4-strain one.
It does have have that extra strain that is probably more likely to see what we're going to have around here.
And just as a side note, I've had it for 5 years, the vaccines, and I haven't had the flu. I haven't even had a cold.
That's great. So
something's working. All right, I'm very lucky.
And it does, and that's something to note too. It is important to get your flu vaccine every year, just because you've had it once. It does, change, as we were saying. So we need to keep that immunity up.
Brilliant. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Sean. That's good news, isn't it? I certainly know people who have had the flu shot and then it just, like last year, like you were saying, it didn't cover the particular strains that were going around. And then in 2015, there were all the horror stories around the Brisbane flu. Even if you did get the flu shot then, you could have got that. But yeah, it's still better than nothing. And you were saying the duration of the length of time that you'll be sick is actually shortened.
Can be reduced, and also the severity, because you have fallen ill with influenza, but the body has those antibodies already in your system ready to fight the infection as well, so it reduces severity.
This is Focus on ABC Radio Brisbane. I'm Emma Griffiths, and you've got about another 20 minutes with Mark Russell Pavia, who's a respiratory scientist. And we're talking about the flu, because I'd say we're already in the flu season, aren't we? The early stages.
Early stages, yeah. May to September, they say, is where we get more cases.
And talking about vaccinations, treatments, how it's spread. Also keen to hear your stories about when the flu has just laid you flat out on your back. 1300 222 612 is the number. Don't Don't put it off, okay, because 20 minutes left with Mark. It's going to fly. Bruce is on Bribey Island. Bruce, what's your question?
Yeah, a couple of questions. First one is I've got to have my flu shot in 2 hours. I'm over 70, had a dose of the flu last year. I get flu shots every year. But it seems there's an offering of 3 with a higher booster and 4 with the Brisbane flu. Now, when I asked them at the surgery, they just said, we run out so quick, we'll just give you what we've got. Should I be making a choice? And the tri one, has it got the Brisbane, the latest Brisbane flu shot in it?
Okay, so the trivalent doesn't. What we tend to do is give the strains that are involved. They tend to come from names of cities that originate. So you've got 2 influenza A's, Michigan and Singapore, and a B, which is Phuket, but it doesn't have the Brisbane in it, the trivalent. That's the quadrivalent that that they do. That is very, very similar like virus to the 2008-like virus. Given that you're over 70, quadrivalent is going to provide a greater or a wider range of protection for you. And if you've got any other secondary issues, respiratory issues, asthma, COPD or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, these things are likely to be really exacerbated by the flu. So it might be worth checking around to see if you can get that quadrivalent. It's definitely going to give you more.
Just quickly... The Australian health people suggest that some people have the flu shot too early because it doesn't last the entire year, and they're suggesting early in May, not April. What's your position?
Okay, so it does. Your immunity does taper off when you take the vaccine, and that's one of the reasons why we do have to have it every single year. But also, the virus itself changes very quickly. Now, these flu vaccines have to be made well in advance. It's a complicated process to actually manufacture them. And what we actually see is that during the season itself, the virus is able to mutate and it's able to change so that that vaccine effectiveness can actually can be reduced as well. So what they're probably trying to do is to make sure those changes are sort of limited and just give the greatest amount of coverage as well.
Mark, we're sparking off some conversation with the medical professionals listening as well. Dr. Steve Hambleton has sent a message in saying the right vaccine for over 65 is the high-dose 3-strain vaccine, not the low-dose 4-strain.
Low dose.
So what would you say?
Look, he's medical practitioner and obviously dealing with these people on the front line. As always, the doctor, the primary doctor, is the person to yep. listen to. And
he also says over 65 should wait for the high-dose vaccine.
Hmm. Well, we do know that the high-dose vaccine does have a much higher level of antigen in it, so it's going to definitely boost their immune response to it as well and measure the vaccine effectiveness as
so
well.
So is that the new high recipe dose that's coming through?
Yes.
So that's one for you, Bruce. So, Bruce, should Bruce get it today, or is that flu zone high dose vaccine and the flu ad, are they actually available or soon?
Available as well, yes, from GPs as well. But if he's been recommended the tri-dose, as I was saying, the quadrivalent does have the Brisbane strain in it. But if he's been recommended to get that, it's all set, ready to go for him. I say don't delay, get some form of coverage as well, because it does take a couple of weeks to activate in the system as well.
So if you have that and then you think, oh, there's this higher dose one, can you go get that one as well?
I believe that it's you take one, there's no need to get two of them. It provides that level of cover as well, so you don't need to redose. Not in the same season.
Okay, more questions coming in my head as well as from you, the listener. We've got Dave in Zilmere. Dave, you've got an existing condition, have you?
Yes, I've got a respiratory disease,
and I had my flu shot in April. And now, if it only lasts 3 months, I'm just wondering if I should have another one in July.
Look, again, it depends on the respiratory condition, and also a question that for the GP as well. You're definitely in that category that the flu can cause the secondary complications. So we know that it's the secondary complications, the bacterial infections, that can actually exacerbate the flu the worst as well. So particularly being a respiratory condition that you've got, definitely worth speaking to your doctor about and seeing if it's worth the follow-up. There's no, it lasts different lengths of time in different people. Everyone responds differently to this. So this is where all of the variation comes into it. It's not an exact science, so to speak.
Mm. So, Dave, what can you tell us about the respiratory condition you've got?
Oh, I'm an ex-smoker. I've got emphysema and I've only got about 30-40% lung capacity.
Mm.
So my doctor has said I'm a very high risk. That's why I thought, well, I'll get in early.
Definitely. You're definitely in that group that that we see quite a lot being admitted to hospital as part of that secondary complication, breathing difficulties as well, as the infections, things like viral pneumonia progressing as well. So,
yeah, you don't want that. Take care, Dave. Annie in Bulimba. Annie? What do you reckon?
My doctor actually said to me this morning, you should have the flu shot. I'm 63.
Sorry, Annie, your phone line's breaking up there a bit. I just wonder if...
Okay.
That's a bit better. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never had a flu shot. I haven't had flu for probably 40-plus years, I should think. And so I'm kind of a bit nervous about getting it when I've been fine. I mean, I haven't even had any really nasty cold for many, many, many years.
And about how old are you, Annie?
I'm 63.
Okay. You're impressive, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Is there any reason why Annie should get the flu shot then?
The recommendations are definitely yes. And it goes back to that herd immunity. So
that's for the rest of us, Annie.
For the rest of us, you're probably very, very lucky that that you haven't had the flu. It might just be, you know, a question of luck as well. I still have the flu shot, even though I'm exposed to patients and dealing with it. Otherwise, relatively healthy. But I come into contact with patients all the time that might be immune compromised. So very important. So Annie, you might find that you come into contact with someone who's not so fortunate, and think of it as helping out the greater population.
Mm-hmm. Annie, what's your secret?
Will you get a sort of small dose of? I mean, how do you feel afterwards? I mean, you know, some things. I remember children, you know, when they have their vaccinations, and sometimes they can, you know, be quite ill for a few days afterwards.
Well, you might get a bit of a sore arm, obviously, from the needle, but one thing to stress is that they're not putting, for most of the vaccines, they're not putting a live virus in it. So if you do get sick after it with a cold or something, it is bad luck, but it's not caused from the vaccine itself.
Okay.
What do you reckon, Annie? Right. Are you going to get it?
Yeah, I'd probably just check with one of my other doctors as well. But, no, I mean, I understand for the greater good sort of thing, then it is advisable. That's, yeah, okay. That's
and cool. do you have a particular secret to good health to share today?
Well, no, I mean, I did have some radiation treatment and stuff 18 months or so ago,
okay,
which is all good. But, you know, even sort of through that, when your immunity is likely to drop, I was very fortunate, I suppose. I don't know, my body just said, you know, eat all those things that they tell you to eat for your immune system. And, yeah, and I touch wood a lot.
I'll touch wood now for you as well.
Exercise and, and a good dose of luck, I think, as well.
Yeah, L-U-C-K, wouldn't that be good? Annie, thank you so much for calling in. A few more minutes left with Mark Russell Pavia, respiratory scientist, talking about flu, asthma, anything affecting your lungs, your breathing? Is that what you'd say, Mark?
Well, The influenza virus is an acute respiratory infection, so definitely can affect upper respiratory, throat, nose, but also affect the lungs as well. But it's the people such as the asthmatics or the people like our previous caller with COPD or the chronic obstructive pulmonary disease who already have that airway dysfunction as well. The influenza virus can certainly exacerbate that, but it's also the complications from the virus itself. So progressing to things like viral pneumonia as well can really cause some serious issues. And that's where you find the deaths occur from those secondary complications.
Viral pneumonia, because there's a different pneumonia as well.
There is, yes, absolutely, bacterial and viral as well. So the ones that are caused by the viruses, such as influenza, not going to respond to antibiotics as well, and they're the ones that often come about, can progress in people in those high-risk categories as well.
Mm. So what are your questions for Mark? We've got time for a couple more. 1300 222 612. And I haven't heard any stories this morning about getting a bad dose of the flu. A couple of years ago, just when I started having chats with you on ABC Radio Brisbane, I was on air for my first month, got the Brisbane flu, off air for a whole month. It was a very short career, wasn't it? If you do have asthma as well, Mark, what do you need to be particularly on the lookout for?
Okay, so asthma, the two main sort of hallmarks of asthma is bronchial wall inflammation or inflammation in the wall of the airways, but also bronchospasm or muscular contraction of those airways, and that's going to reduce the airway size. Now, we know that the influenza virus exacerbates those, so you'll get a lot more inflammation throughout, and you might find that the medications, the corticosteroids that you're taking or the bronchodilators don't have the major effect that they do when you're otherwise healthy as well. So it can definitely cause extra complications for sure.
So if you have asthma and, you know, it's the flu season and it's also winter's a bad time for asthma, isn't it?
It is. Generally, I mean, very generalisation, we say that the lungs don't like cool, dry air. It's the warm, humid air that that the lungs tend to respond to. So you tend to get that hypersensitivity or hyper-responsiveness happening during those colder months as well.
Mm. So take all your medication if you're an asthmatic, and the first sign of a flu, head to a doctor.
Compliance, absolutely.
Get vaccinated.
Get vaccinated. Stay compliant with your asthma therapy. We find that a lot of long-term asthmatics tend to be a little bit flippant sometimes, going on and off the medication. When they feel great, don't take it as diligently. So definitely stay with it.
Mm.
Asthma's a lifelong condition, so you may have a bit of a reprieve from the symptoms, but if you've got it, there's always those hallmarks underlying.
Mm. Gail in Norman Park, what's your question for Mark?
Hi, thanks for talking to me. Look, I'm querying the fact that I had the bad flu last year. I always get a flu injection. I'm 70. I have been for my 3-strain. I can't have the 4-strain. Now, if I had a bad flu last year, really bad on my back for 7 days, I feel vulnerable at the moment that I haven't got the 4-strain. So I'm wondering, should I be worried?
Well, year to year, we know that the virus does change. And as the doctor kindly sent the message in before saying that for your category, it appears that the trivalent is going to be the best. Definitely, look, stick with it each particular year, because although you had it last year, the strain that we may see this year is going to change. So, your immunity is not as strong, so definitely important to take it again this year.
Yeah, I've had it this year, but I'm wondering why I don't have the 4-strain. Why I'm vulnerable to one is left out.
Look,
so I think doctors are essentially saying, Gail, that the 3-strain vaccine has a higher dose,
yep,
and that it is
dose.
Better for over 65s.
Yep, I'm aware of that. Okay, then, thanks very much.
Okay.
Right.
Love your work, Gail. Paul on the Gold Coast, what do you need to know, Paul?
Yeah, g'day. Listen, I've got ulcerative colitis and I'm on infliximab, a special medication, which I believe knocks out part of my immune system. Should I be getting this flu shot and which one?
Look, very, very specific question, that one in terms of the pharmacological interactions. I definitely can't comment on that with my job not being diagnosis. That's definitely, I'll be honest with you, definitely a question for your doctor.
You need to get you to your doctor.
Absolutely.
But yeah, any compromised immune system
is,
hopefully there's something he would say you can do.
Absolutely. If you're already immune compromised, that's going to definitely be an issue. But in terms of the drug interaction, that's, a definite question for your doctor.
Okay. Peter in Biwa. Peter.
Hello.
Hello. What's troubling you?
Emma, what I'd like to ask is, people with sunken chests, are they more susceptible?
Sunken chests.
Mm.
What do you mean by that exactly, Peter?
It's instead of being, it's the opposite of being pigeon chest, put it that way.
So the term, fancy term, pectum excavatum, basically the chest, the thoracic development is inwards, causes a restrictive pattern. So the lungs can sometimes not inflate as much. So when we do testing like spirometry or lung function tests, we do see that the patient generally has a restricted breathing pattern and also a reduction in lung volumes. Whether they're more susceptible to the flu.
I'm asking basically is there less insulation to the outside temperatures and that could cause problems?
No, well, with the flu, you actually ingest the particles or the aerosols, so external temperature is not going to affect it so much, or less insulation. That's not going to affect whether you get the flu or not. It's the mode of transmission is by touching surfaces or inhaling the respiratory particles from coughs or sneezes or things along those lines. So you're not going to get it transdermally or across the skin.
Peter, is this you?
Sorry?
Is this you that you've got this? Are you talking about your own case, yourself?
Yep, myself, yep.
And have you had a flu shot before?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've missed out the last 3 years, and I'm 82, and I'm travelling pretty well. But I do look after my immune system. I'm retired, so I'm not in crowded trains and things like that.
What else do you do to look after your immune system? Live in Biwa?
Sorry?
Look, living in Biwa, I imagine, would be good for your immune system as well. The calls, I think, yeah, we've got a couple of minutes left. Jenny in Kapalabar. Jenny, what's up?
Hi, Sarah. Thanks.
It's Emma. That's okay. Oh, I love Sarah too. Sorry. It's Emma, yeah.
Emma. I love the subject for today. My question is that I'm an asthmatic and I cannot have the flu needle because I come up in blisters. And I'm wondering whether one of the doctors could give me a remedy of some sort, please.
Oh, have you heard of this happening before, Mark?
Look, that's I suppose you've got two things that are going to put you at high risk. You've got a pre-existing respiratory condition and the fact that you're allergic to the flu vaccine itself. It's going to be a case of one of those of practicing good hygiene.
Yep, I do.
That's fantastic. Washing hands as well and trying not to subject yourself to people who may have the flu or an upper respiratory tract infection.
But
very difficult if you're not able to have that vaccine as well. But definitely, look, stay diligent with your asthma medications. So I take it you're on sort of combination therapy as well?
Yeah, I'm on two different. I was on three, but I really had a bad asthma attack and just come out. So I'm on Sennacord and just the normal one. But I always... the house clean. If I get a knife and fork out, I'll rewash that again. If I wash my hands, I'll sing happy birthday because they say if you do that, that's when you come to clean.
Exactly. No, I've heard that as well. You've got to sing happy birthday. You've got to wash your hands for the duration of the song.
Yeah, they say,
Oh, well, gosh.
Thank you.
Oh, life's
I'm 65, but I'll just keep doing what I normally do.
Yeah.
Anyhow, but thank you very much.
Thank you, Jenny. Which prompts a question about those alcohol hand cleansers. Mm. Are they worth carrying around in flu season, using?
Alcohol-based cleansers, they will, yeah, kill the virus. So it's important to, you can wash your hands with them if you're in public as well. Some of the other things, good supply of tissues, not handkerchiefs, because that's going to harbour the virus. So definitely practising good hygiene as well. And making sure if you've got a sneeze or a cough or something, you're not spreading it by coughing to a tissue or something. These are all very, very basic things, but they
Or
the elbow, absolutely. Washing hands afterwards, definitely the good hygiene is going to reduce the risk.
Now, Mark, what's the deal with Tamiflu? You know, do you know anything about, do you see patients and you talk about Tamiflu with them at all?
Not really. The patients that I see are primarily the ones who are admitted for influenza. The doctor that I work for has obviously care of patients. So most of the patients that I deal with are having these influenza A's and influenza B's.
Okay. So Tamiflu's for another conversation then. Mm. What about building up, maybe last question for today, building up your respiratory health? You got any advice for people as to how to keep yourself healthy as possible?
Number one piece of advice, do not smoke. That is an absolute gimme. Do not smoke. In terms of living a good life, in terms of respiratory health, exercise regularly. Don't expose yourself to too many pathogens. So a lot of the gardeners out there, people dealing with mulch and compost, make sure you're wearing a mask, those types of things as well. But definitely,
why? What's in the mulch and compost?
You've got aerosol particles. You've got bacteria that you can inhale. They're very, very small, so you want to make sure that you're not exposing yourself. People in the building industry that are constantly around dusty environments and things like that, always be over diligent and wear masks, cover up as well.
Okay, so we all need to wear a mask.
Not so much, but those who are exposed, just doing general activities, working in the garden if you're doing that, or, you know, some of the people that are working on building sites, it's a good idea to cover up.
Mm, that's very interesting.
Concrete exposure or something along those lines.
Yeah, okay. Mm. You don't want that in your lungs, I guess. Mark Russell-Pavia, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and wisdom today.
You.
Mark's a respiratory scientist, and thank you for your calls. In a moment, we're going to have a look back at the week on Focus and also catch up with any developments in those particular topics that we've had a look at already.
Focus with Emma Griffiths on ABC Radio Brisbane.
And it is Friday. We have a look back now at what we've done on Focus through the week, from menopause, marijuana, mental illness. It was a nice alliteration there, wasn't it, Amanda Dell? Also, the Banking Royal Commission, a catch-up on that. So what did you want to start with a look back at?
Let's start with Monday, though perhaps we should start with today, seeing... I've been struck down all week. Well, no, I haven't had the flu. I've had a cold. Let's make that distinction. I have not had the flu.
And a flu shot today.
Yes. But, yes, on Monday we talked about whether recreational marijuana should be legalised. Of course, that was something that the Greens brought up last week, and we decided that we'd have that conversation. It was... interesting. I expected that we'd have more people against that proposal, but on our Facebook page, on our and the callers that we got were mostly in favour, which I would have thought that we would have had much more opposition expressed, but it just didn't happen. But
not for the show. I certainly heard it, you know, around the school gate that afternoon. So maybe it was the no case that weren't calling in. Mm. By the way, Amanda's often the person that will answer the call when you call in to tell your story or share your opinion on Focus. So, you know.
So be nice.
Yeah, exactly. Be nice to her. She'll put you on air. Okay, so what did you want to remind us of?
So we'll have a we'll play some call that we had during the show from Shane, who his views might have been a bit surprising considering his experiences.
Hey guys, look, I personally dealt with the fallout with regard to my oldest boy, and it's not pleasant. I mean, I sort of 15 months of it, but at the end of the day, he's come through that with nothing but support. Now, what I'm saying is, you don't know what you're smoking. You're buying something off someone who could have put anything in there. You can grow it with whatever goes into it. What goes in the bag? Who knows? You've got no idea. If it's controlled and sold as a controlled substance, at least you know what you're getting. And then you can deal with it accordingly. I mean, yes, there is a mental health problem, and I've seen it firsthand, and it's not pleasant. But I think what I'm saying in the end of the day is this stuff needs to be legalized. You need a point of purchase for this. And it's simple as that, because at the end of the day, it's clean, it's grown properly, and it's legal. Simple as that.
And so that was Shane. Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah,
thanks for calling in,
Shane. I think
Shane.
A lot of people who'd had, you know, he'd seen his son really struggle with his marijuana use, I think a lot of people would have the opposite reaction to that and say, no,
yeah, you
restrict it as much as possible.
Well, you'd wish it didn't exist, but of course that's not going to happen.
Mm. Yeah. So we got another text, and as I said, almost universally, I think we got one call on Monday that was saying, absolutely not, this should remain an illegal drug. So, but this is one of the texts that we got after the program from Jeff. Legalise it. I'm 63 and have smoked all my life to medicate my back pain. A gateway drug? Not to my knowledge or experience. I have held a permanent position in the labour market all of my life, own my own home and have a healthy superannuation balance. Psychosis? Oh, please. People make their own choices in life, so don't go blaming a weed that has many medicinal advantages and has been used for centuries. If legalised, the black market disappears. Quality is assured for all users, and the taxes reaped by the government will have our national debt paid off within a year. There's a big call, Jeff. The people opposed to legislation have watched Reefer Madness perhaps a little more than they should have.
Oh. So
Jeff has some very strong opinions on it.
The Parliamentary Budget Office, which is an independent unit in Parliament House in Canberra, MPs can send any of their policies to it, basically, and say, what's this going to do to the budget? And the Parliamentary Budget Office has apparently come back to the Greens saying it could add almost $2 billion a year to the federal budget if it's regulated, as the Greens suggest. Mm. So
it's not insignificant.
Not
and
at
you
all.
Might have seen, many of you might have seen Four Corners on Monday night, which was also about cannabis. If you haven't seen it, you can go and watch it on iView. It was more about the business side and the businesses that are springing up in Australia that have huge valuations on them. Now, they have been set up ostensibly to cater for the legalisation of marijuana, cannabis for medicinal uses, but quite a few of them said, well, but they expected that this would become legal for recreational use at some point in the future as well.
And marijuana for fun.
Yeah, it was interesting that these businesses are already here. They're already growing.
Indeed they are. And then on Tuesday, we had another look. We had a look at another M word.
Yes, we looked at menopause on Tuesday and the fact that women who are in their 30s and 40s don't really know what to expect or what's coming up for them and don't know even what age they might expect to go into perimenopause, which is, I think, any time after 40 is considered a normal age. Sort of, if it's in your 30s, then perhaps you need to be looked at a bit more closely, but 40s is normal. And I think that's really shocking for a lot of people who assume that it's your 50s or maybe your 60s. I don't know. It's that sort of, there's not a lot of knowledge out there. We don't get a lot of education about menopause. But we had a call from Micah who, well, let's just say that she hasn't let anything slow her down.
I got at the office Monday, probably for about 30 seconds, I thought, is that a hot flush? And I thought about it a little bit and went to the doctor and said, I'd like to get into HRT. And he said, why, have you got hot flushes, et cetera, et cetera? I said, no, but I do know that when your body starts leaching, gets ready for menopause, starts leaching estrogen, because you're no longer fertile, it says, well, then you don't need calcium either. So I was very worried about bone loss. I've been on HRT, and I'll be 75 in July. But Thursday a week ago, I was out in the valley dancing till 3 o'clock, and I occasionally end up falling on my bum, and the whole trick is how quickly you're up again, usually in one fast moment, and I put it all down to HRT.
And Micah, I believe she said she's in her 70s.
75 in July. I'm going to be 44 in July, and I can't go out to the valley and party till 3 in the morning. I love you, Micah.
That was great, wasn't it? Then on Wednesday was Anzac Day, of course, and we had some people in here to talk about mental health and the military. The discussion went to some interesting places, including about the impact of growing up in a defence family. But the audio I want to play is from Mick Donaldson, who's former SAS, who was our guest in the studio. And it was what he had to say about transitioning out of the army and how it's not as simple as you think it might be.
I injured my back and could no longer be an operator.
How'd you do that?
It was on operations.
Yeah, can't tell me.
It's not that. I jumped off a car and hurt my back.
So what was the transition out of it like and then out of the
Defence
Force?
Well, it was
sudden.
It wasn't planned. I didn't get medically discharged, but I made a decision of I didn't want to drive a desk. I joined the Army to soldier. I had the best job in the world, which is patrol commander of the Special Air Service Regiment. I could no longer do that, so I thought this is time to say thanks very much. And look, transition's exceptionally hard. And when I get it right, I'll give you a call.
That'd be good.
That was 2004. I left full-time service. So I still haven't got it right.
So I think maybe there's something more to explore there at that transitioning from defence life to civilian life and why it can be a really complex thing and what goes on, what are the differences, why is it so hard?
Absolutely. Let's do it sometime, tomorrow.
Yeah, I think it was really interesting to hear that. The defence family stuff was interesting as well. Yesterday we were talking about the Banking Royal Commission, which just continues to deliver some shocking facts about what's been going on in financial institutions. But yesterday, after the program, one of the witnesses actually collapsed. He was from a company called Dover Financial. He actually collapsed in the witness stand. Must have been feeling the pressure of
that. Is he okay?
I saw some vision of him last night. I think he is okay, but that just shows some of the pressure of that questioning that must be happening. There was also apparently a document dump from round one of the Royal Commission that's exposed that Westpac's home loan assessment standards are dramatically worse than the rest of the Big Four, causing its share price to slump. We got some more texts after the program about that discussion. Hi, Emma. When are we going to see police raids on the financial institutions? It seems justified given the Royal Commission findings to date. That was Peter from Springfield. Where are the Jeff Cousins of this world? His call for business leaders to speak up about this moral value-free zone goes unheeded. That's Kathy of 8 Mile Plains. No name on this one. I believe the not-for-profit organisations also need a Royal Commission as there is just as much underhand business going on within transparency and accountability.
Ooh,
taxpayers are sick to death of footing the bill for inept and sometimes illegal I'm assuming practices.
Yeah, okay.
And the last one, as an independent financial planner with 20 years' experience, I have watched AMP over that time. Their culture is one of sales and not getting the client focus first. So, look, there's much more to come out of that Royal Commission.
Absolutely. We'll be updating you as well. Thank you, Amanda Dell, producer of the Focus program, as is Ruth Diglar. Jacob Roebuck is our social media coordinator. All of our programs are on the website, dating back to late Jan. Go to your search engine, look up ABC Radio Focus.